life what the primordial fluctuations in our universe are. And so yesterday we trained on the harmonic oscillator, which was time dependent, and that made things interesting. And so now we'll make a next step, next approximation. So we will consider scalar field, but this scalar field will still be a test scalar field, so it will be in fixed FRW background, and so it doesn't back react on the geometry. Of course, during the inflation, because you, in principle, you have to treat both of the fields dynamical, then you will be producing gravitational waves and stuff like that. You will be changing the metric due to the coupling of the two fields. But of course, we don't allow this to happen here. So we still have fixed FRW space. And for simplicity, and as always, we choose k equal to zero, so a flat spatial geometry. So this is the action for the scalar field, which we consider massless. And then 1/2 g mu nu d mu phi d nu phi. And so if you write it down as we did already many times in the FRW space, it's just given by an integral over dt, d3x, and then 1/2 a cube comes from the determinant, and phi dot square minus 1 over a square, nabla phi square. Okay, so this is what we have seen many times already. So now if you look at this expression here, the kinetic term is not the standard kinetic term because you have this a cube here. And so people don't like that, so people always like to have something dot square standing on its own. So you want to make this to be standard kinetic term, so we want to absorb a into phi somehow. And that's typically done in two steps. So first step is that you change to conformal time. Instead of the time t, you will use time eta. So d eta is dt over a. And then instead of dot, which was derivative with respect to time, I'll be using prime, which is derivative with respect to eta. And so this is a trivial change. So now you'll find that this is equal to d eta, d3x, and 1/2. Now 1a disappeared, and we will have phi prime square, and then this 1 over a square disappeared from the potential term. So just do it yourself. Okay, so that's the first step. And then the second step is to do a clever change of fields. And the idea comes from Mukhanov. And so he introduced so-called Mukhanov's variable. Nu, which is simply your original field phi times the scale factor a. So C for, you know, such a simple thing as multiplying your original variable by a, and you're already famous for that. So that's more kind of variable. And if you change these coordinates, then your action becomes d eta, d3x, 1/2, nu prime square, so precisely as I promised, the standard kinetic term, and then nabla nu square. But the price to pay, of course, is that we absorb a into the new variable, but you have to differentiate it, so there'll be some differentiation time derivatives of a, and so you pick up an extra term, a double prime over a times nu square. Okay, so this is what you get after you introduce Mukhanov's variable. But the kinetic term is the standard one, as you know. Okay, so that's the magic we have done with the action. So the next step, of course, is to write down the equations of motion. So you vary with respect to phi, with respect to nu here, and you find that the equations of motion are simply nu double prime minus nabla square plus a over a nu. equals to zero. So that's your equation of motion. And you can expand the solution of this equation of motion as we did yesterday. So x is a killing coordinate. So all three x's are killing coordinates. And that's why you can do the standard Fourier transform in x. I didn't stress that yesterday, but we could write v3k and you know stuff like that yesterday only because x was actually killing coordinates. So anyway, so here certainly you can do this. So you write this as a Fourier decomposition if you want, v3k, ak, uk, x and eta, and then the conjugate term, ak dagger, uk star, x and eta. And of course, this is nothing else than the expanding of the solution Q for the harmonic oscillator in terms of f and f star.
Yeah, just to make sure, this a slash is slash prime is derivative with respect to eta.
So this is d over d eta.
Okay.
Thanks for asking. All right, so that's the classical solution to these things. And of course, in order to really have the solution, you need to find the basis which satisfies the equation here. So uk will be solution of that, and uk star the solution of that. And a dagger are just the constants. But of course, you will eventually quantize this, and so then these will become operators. So anyway, let me just remind you that you have this scalar product I wrote down yesterday, nu1. Nu 2. And so yesterday I wrote it in a covariant form. There was this determinant, so integrated over the Cauchy surface sigma, and there was a determinant of the metric. So now you can easily check that the determinant of the metric for here is actually equal to 1. And so the scalar product just becomes d3x, and then nu 1 star d eta nu 2 minus d eta nu 1 star nu 2. Okay, so this is the scalar special case of the scalar product I introduced yesterday. So then you want to normalize the solutions with respect to the scalar product. And of course, in analogy with having f equal to 1, you want that uk prime is delta kk prime. So you require proper normalization of your solutions. And so, for example, you require uk prime equals to delta k minus k prime. And similarly, for stars, you will have minus delta kk prime. And a new star are orthogonal, so they'll be zero. OK? So now you would like to be searching for a solution of this equation. And as I told you, x is a killing coordinate. So you can do the standard Fourier transform with respect to the x coordinate. So you'll have the standard exponential ikx. However, for everything is time dependent, so I cannot do it for time. I cannot have I or omega eta. So the proper ansatz, so the ansatz, which must work, ansatz, and this is due to homogeneity and isotropy, meaning that x is a killing coordinate, killing coordinate. We can write uk x of eta as the following ansatz. So there is some normalization factor, 3/2, why not? And then f of k eta. So this is some general function of eta. I can write it as e to I omega eta, because eta is not a killing coordinate, but x is. So I can write it as e to I k dot x. OK, so that's the ansatz. And again, this doesn't work. So now you take that ansatz and you plug it into your equation of motion. And because you know everything apart from fk of eta, this equation of motion actually becomes an equation of motion for fk of eta. Okay, and so plug two equations of motion, and what you get is a following famous equation, fk double prime plus k square minus a fk equals to zero. So this is kind of equation. So Mukarov is here quite often, so maybe you will be lucky to meet him here. But he's really the pioneer of these cosmological perturbations and inflation and stuff like that. And he's a tough guy. Okay. So now this is the equation which we are getting. And so if you look at that equation, this looks like a harmonic oscillator, right? So with respect to eta. But if I call this thing a frequency, so now this frequency depends on eta because the scale factor does. Okay, so now I have omega k square eta. And so what you are really getting is an, you transport your problem of studying the scalar field in fixed FRW to a problem of infinite many, so infinite silly many harmonic oscillators with time-dependent frequency, and of course this time-dependent frequency. So why infinitely many? Because you have one equation for one harmonic oscillator for each k. Okay, and so so this is your problem now. So now what you can check is that if you take this scalar product here and plug in this ansatz here, and for example require that uk, uk prime is delta, then it automatically follows that this thing will also be normalized, this function here, and will be precisely normalized with respect to the scalar product of that harmonic oscillator. And as we done before, so we have fk and fk, and this was the scalar product of harmonic oscillator equals to 1. So it follows from that scalar product that this scalar product this function satisfies nice normalization with respect to the old scalar product. All right, so where do we continue? Maybe here. Is it visible to everybody? Can you see here? Okay. Okay, very good. So this is all classical. So we solved the classical problem of scalar field in FRW. So now let's quantize. So let's quantize. And so for that, you need to, again, I'll be doing canonical quantization. So I define what the canonical momentum is. So canonical momentum so pi, which is of course dl over d nu prime, and you find that as always is just nu prime. So we had that the p was q dot. It's precise analog. Now the canonical momentum is just nu prime. And then what you impose, of course, is the canonical commutation relations at equal time. So for example, nu eta x and nu and phi at eta x prime commutation is just I delta 3 x minus x prime. Okay, so and then all the other products, all the other commutators will be equal to zero. So we quantize that. So I don't know, what did you do? Why did you have QFT1, QFT2, QFT3? Right, it can be done in 1 minute. Very good. So, of course, because we expanded the field in terms of these things, these are now operators, and you can write down this commutation relation in terms of the operators. So you'll have AK, AK prime dagger is again this delta function, K minus K prime. And then you proceed, you define your vacuum. So this is your annihilation operator. And so vacuum is simply annihilated by your annihilation operator for all K. So is this really visible? Is it fine? Or okay. So we did quantize it in this blackboard. So now let's do some physics with this quantized field. And so in particular, we are interested in calculating the power spectrum, right? So you want to calculate the power spectrum. So I just remind you, so that's our expression for nu. But of course, nu is just rescaled phi. So if I want to write it, if I want to really calculate the fluctuations of the original field phi, let me just write what this phi is. So phi, x, and eta, our ansatz is that this is 1 over a, which comes from that substitution, if you want. And then d3k, and then 1 over 2 pi 3 halves, just to see what beast we have to deal with. And then AK and F of K of eta E to I KX, and then the complex conjugate AK dagger F star of K, and then E to minus I KX. Okay, so this is our field. And then what we want to calculate, what is actually called power spectrum, is related to the two-point function in the k-space. So what we want to calculate is phi k, phi k prime, where this is, of course, the Fourier transform of phi x. OK, so what this beast is, well, I said Fourier transform d3x, d3x prime, and then e to I kx, e to I kx prime, and then of the position space, two-point correlation function, so phi x eta and phi x prime eta. Okay. So now, because our universe is homogeneous and isotropic, everything better be translationally invariant. So now what it means is that this thing here, so if you have translation invariance, means that all the correlation functions have to have that invariance. And so this depends on x and x prime, but it only can depend on the difference between x and x prime. Okay, so this is some function of x and minus x prime by translational invariance. And if this is some function of x minus x prime, you can change variables, you can introduce y, which is x minus x prime, and you can actually integrate one integral after the other. So anyway, so the result, because you can integrate these things, the result will only depend on delta k plus k prime. On k plus k prime. So the statement is that this must have a form by this translation invariance, delta 3 k plus k prime, as you can confirm by the calculation. And then something which is precisely called power spectrum, and that will only depend on the magnitude of k and eta. OK, so So you can argue that because of the translation invariance, it has to have this form. And this equation here is nothing else than the definition of what you mean by the power spectrum. So this guy here is called power spectrum, and this is what we are after. Okay, so now you can actually do it explicitly. So you can integrate one by one thing. And if you do the integral explicitly, well, it's a little bit of pain, right? Because for each of these phis, I have to plug in this beast, right? And then, of course, what this averaging means is that I'm sandwiching by the vacuum, right? So I let these operators act on the vacuum. And of course, if I have two annihilation operators, they kill that. And if I have two creation, they kill that, and so on. So the only thing which is non-trivial will be, again, the product of this guy, this product of that guy. Okay. And so it's not so surprising that in the end, this just pickups FK square. Okay, do it yourself. It's lots of integrals to do, right? So we have two already here. And then we have one here, but we have two of them. So two here, but do it. It's very, very simple integration. Do it as an exercise. So anyway, the result is that, so this is the explicit integration, sit integration. And the result comes out to be whatever we expected, u pi cube, delta 3. K plus K prime, and the result of the integration is just FK square. Well, what else it would be, right? It's nothing else it can be. And the reason why nothing else it can be is also that, remember, if we did the similar calculation for the harmonic oscillator, we got also F in square, right? So that's why FK square. So now we are replacing all the results which we had for harmonic oscillator is the same result, but now dependent on k times the corresponding delta function, right? So it must be this. And so we have a very important result that the power spectrum is simply given by this fk square divided by a square, by the scale factor square. Questions so far? Yes? No? So the power spectrum is just given by F K square divided by A square. So to calculate how these fluctuations looked, the primordial fluctuations looked here, all we need to do is to calculate this fk square. And fk square, well, fk is just a classical solution of our Muganov's equation, right? Where, so fk is a classical solution. Of Muganov's equation, so Muganov's equation is a second-order differential equation, and of course, in order to solve this uniquely, you need to provide the initial conditions. Provided, right, or initial conditions. Okay, so now here comes the play. So different people impose different initial conditions, and then they study what happens. But most of the people just go for the simplest possible choice. And the simplest possible choice is connected with something which is called Bunch-Davis vacuum. Okay, so typical choice for these initial conditions is that you require that at early times, meaning you know, when the inflation started, or you know, before the inflation, at early times, if you look at this equation here, what really makes it annoying is this a double prime over a, right? So that's the eta dependence. So if I kill that eta dependence in early times, I make the standard harmonic oscillator with constant frequency dependent on k, so with omega over k equal to k. So what you require that annoying term actually vanishes. So at early times, you require that a double prime over a goes to zero. And so if that is true, that in these early times, we have the omega k eta is actually a constant equal to k. And of course, you can easily solve that equation. So you have that f k of eta in these early times actually goes like 1 over 2k e to minus I k eta. So if you remember, as we discussed yesterday, the scattering problem, or you know, the f in and f out mode. So this is precisely like you assumed that at the beginning, you know, everything was well defined and we had well defined things. And so this is an analog of f in yesterday's lecture. Okay, and so then you have the corresponding solutions of the Mukhanov equations. So we have the corresponding solution of the Mukhanov equation, provided this initial condition is satisfied. And these solutions, of course, give you what the annihilation operators are. You expand them in, and they define you the vacuum. So solutions give the right vacuum. And so this vacuum, of course, is defined by AK. So AK is now given by our solution is equal to zero. And this vacuum is called Bunch-Davis vacuum. So what's going on here is the following picture. So we have eta here. And so I just remind you that because we have accelerated universe, we proved in the second lecture, or maybe third, when we discussed these horizons and stuff like that, that actually, if you have accelerated universe, eta can go from minus infinity to zero. Okay, so actually eta goes all the way to minus infinity. And then you have zero somewhere. So anyway, so let's say here you have the Big Bang, which corresponds to eta, you know, negative and whatever. And what you are, and so here this would be the inflation era. Inflation. And then you would have the era of reheating. And then the radiation would start. So I'm just plotting that basically the same picture, but a little bit differently. So now what you assume is that, you know, before the inflation started, or you know, somewhere after the Big Bang, you start with this Bunch-Davis vacuum. So we start with nice vacuum for your fluctuations. And then you quantum mechanically produce these fluctuations, and these fluctuations get stretched out. And at this point, the mold leaves the horizon. So remember, we were comparing whatever HA with respect to K is. So this is precisely when HA is K. Okay, and then the mold freezes. And then it reemerges here as a plasma fluctuation, plasma oscillation. Okay. So now we will calculate this power spectrum, these fluctuations of the field. And of course, you can calculate it at any time during the inflation, but you don't really care at any time. You care about what happens here. When the mode freezes, you know, you are interested in those fluctuations. So we will calculate this power spectrum over here. And then, because the mode freezes, the power spectrum freezes, and the reemerge is here. And so that gives you precisely the right initial conditions for your plasma fluctuations, for your plasma oscillations. And then you see these plasma oscillations through the CMB. Okay. And so that's the picture, what we are trying to achieve. And all we have to do is to complete this calculation, we actually have to solve this equation here, right? So now, of course, the equation depends on the scale factor A, and the scale factor behavior of the scale factor depends on how the scalar field behaves, right? What is the potential for the scalar field? You know, what's happening with the scalar field? So we have chosen massless scalar field, but people can choose, you know, more complicated models or whatever. And so anyway, so even for scale field which is massless, to solve this equation is a little bit complicated. So what I'll do is that instead, I'll approximate our inflation era with just the De Sitter expansion. Okay, and so you know that De Sitter expansion is just constant cosmological constant. Although it's correct, although it sounds bad. And of course, you can simulate that by freezing the field, freezing the scalar field. Okay, so that's like a special solution for your scalar field if you want. So instead of solving the full Fukanov's equation, let me I should keep this one here, right? Oh no, let me write it here. All right, so for simplicity, consider inflation as De Sitter expansion. And so if we make this approximation, then I have written this 1,000 times, but let me write it again. So the scale factor is just given by the exponential, where the Hubble constant now, where the Hubble parameter is now constant. And so we need to write A as a function of eta to write down what that Mukanov's equation is. So what is eta? So eta is just an integral dt at. Okay. And you just integrate the exponential, and the result, of course, is exponential. So this is minus 1 over h e to minus ht. Or if you plug it in terms of the scale factor, is just given by minus 1 over ha. Or in other words, a is just minus 1 over h eta. So now we express the scale factor in terms of the conformal time. Very good. So now what your Mukanov equation is this thing here. So it's fk double prime, and then plus k square, and then a double prime, well, a is that thing here. It will go like 1 over eta cube, and then you divide by a, 1 over eta, so this thing goes like 1 over eta square, and this is what you get. So in the Desiter approximation, the Mukhanov's equation looks like this. And so our frequency is now k squared minus 2 over eta squared. And so now if you look at early times, so note that as eta goes to minus infinity, then actually the second term goes to zero. And so our omega k actually goes to k, which is precisely what we required by this choice of Bunch-Davis vacuum. Okay, so the De Sitter expansion actually really satisfies that condition which I imposed over there. And so indeed you have Bunch-Davis vacuum. Okay, so this is fine. And that's why people like this vacuum. Very good. So now what it means that I know that in early times, I can really impose this initial condition here for the mode. So now what you are doing is that you are solving that equation with this initial condition. Okay? And so you open your Mathematica and ask Mathematica to solve it. And so the solution is actually, given by 1 over 2k and then e minus I k eta and then 1 minus I over k eta. So this is the solution which Mathematica gives you if you're solving this equation, provided that initial condition for eta goes to minus infinity. Can you still see that? All right. So now we can happily calculate the power spectrum because we know what fk is. We know what a is as a function of eta. So we just use that formula over there. And what we find is a very nice result. So our power spectrum now is just given. So power spectrum of k is just f k square over a square. We know what a is, it's there. We know what fk is, it's over there. And there's that I, so yeah, it's just complex number square. So this is written as 8 square, eta square, 1 over 2k, and then 1 plus 1 over k square, eta square. Okay, so this is the power spectrum produced by inflation, which is De Sitter inflation. So now, of course, in that picture, I tried to explain to you that we don't really need the power spectrum, you know, at any time in the inflation. We rather need it as the inflation ended. So we need it around eta equal to zero. Okay, so let's take the limit. So at the end of inflation, meaning eta goes to zero. Well, surprisingly, you can actually take the limit, although it seems like it's 1 over zero. But that's precisely the nice term. And so you find that the power spectrum is just 8 squared, which is a constant, and then 2k cubed. Isn't that nice and simple prediction for the power spectrum? Okay, so the power spectrum goes like 1 over k cubed if you had exact De Sitter expansion during inflation. So now why people are so excited about this 1 over k cubed is that some of you definitely know, I didn't know, but this is precisely what a scale invariant means, scale invariant spectrum. So your theory actually shares the scale, well, has the scale invariance. So now, this may be obvious to everybody but me. Let me give you like very, very, well, pedestrian proof why this is scale invariant. Are there any questions so far? Yes.
So, we just guessed the form of A out of the De Sitter expansion.
Uh-huh.
How consistent is that A has this form given that we have this field?
That's a very good question. Wait for it for another 10 minutes and then you will see. So what we are really predicting, if we approximate it by this De Sitter expansion, we are finding that the spectrum goes like 1 over k cubed. I'll tell you what the observation is. Just wait 10 minutes, please. Other questions? Okay, so why this guy might be scale invariant? So why scale invariant? And you'll probably laugh at my proof, but doesn't matter. So you consider the scaling transformation. Scaling transformation is that you go from x to lambda times x, right? So I just scale my coordinates, and this is my scaling transformation. And of course, the trick is to write this infinitesimally. So 1 plus epsilon is lambda. So this is just x plus epsilon x, okay? So this is an infinitesimal scaling transformation. And so then you take your field, and then you expand it around x. And so you do the Taylor expansion. Of course, the first term will be just phi x. And then I'll say the phi lambda x minus phi x is delta phi. Okay, so the delta phi. And so the next term in the expansion is just the derivative of this thing. So it's derivative of phi with respect to x times this thing. So it's x times derivative of phi with respect to x. So my delta phi is just x times d phi over dx. Okay, so this is something is obvious to everybody, but okay. So just by Taylor expanding this thing here. Oh, very good. So now we know what the scaling transformations do to our fields. And so if we are to have a scale invariant theory, our correlation functions have to be scale invariant. So in particular, so scale requiring scale invariance our correlation functions are invariant under this change of fields. Okay, so in particular for a two-point correlation function, so you do this variation, so you do this e x dx, and then you act on a two-point correlation function, phi x, and let me, for simplicity, make the other argument 0. And so if the theory is scale invariant, this two-point correlation function cannot change under this, so you have to have 0. Okay, so now what this is x d over dx, and then an integral, I make it in the k space, so d3k, d3k prime, 2 pi cube, okay, and then e to minus I k times x, so that will be the Fourier transform, and then phi k prime, and I have only one exponential because the other one has x equal to 0, so the other exponential is not there. Okay, so this is what it is in when we rewrite it in the k space. But this thing was just a definition of our power spectrum. So this was given by 2 pi cube delta k plus k prime p of k. Okay, so this is just a definition of what we mean by power spectrum. So now you can use this delta function on here to kill one of the integrals. Of course, so let's kill one of the integrals. So we have that this is equal to x d over dx, and then d3k 2 pi cube e minus kx, and then pk. Okay. So now, if you look at what this derivative with respect to x is really doing, well, the only dependence on x is in this exponential. So what it really does is it brings down just the k factor ik down, right? And so it's a clever trick. So in the end, what you really have is x dot times k inside the integral, and then some I as well. Okay, so the trick is to rewrite it in this form. So k dot x, you write it in a very clever form. So you write it as d3k 2 pi cube. And then let's see e minus I k times x. So you change basically the derivative from x to derivative over k. So now you're bringing down x. But then I have to return the k. Okay, so if you look at this, is this x times k? So this is definitely true, right? So I just did this writing. Okay, and so this is still true. And now the trick is to integrate by parts. Okay, so now this is equal to by parts. So I move this derivative over k. Of course, I neglect the boundary terms. Okay, and then you know I have to differentiate k. So you are making a divergence of k. Okay, which will be actually 3, and then you are acting with this k derivative on pk as a second term, using the Leibniz rule. Okay, so this is equal to d3k 2 pi cube. And then e to minus I kx, and then acting on this d over dk on k, I get 3, and acting on d over dk, I get whatever I get, so k times d over dk of pk. And of course, this is still, sorry, the bracket is here. Well, excellent, that's the result. So now you require scale invariance. So this whole thing has to be equal to 0. And so the only possibility is that this is equal to 0. Okay, so you are getting a differential equation for pk, right? And that magic factor 3, of course, is, and it's actually minus 3 if you put it on the other side, is the origin of 1 over k cubed. So it's easy to check that p of k actually has to go like 1 over k cubed is the solution of that differential equation that we obtained here. So really, if you require a scale invariant spectrum, you are getting something which has to look like 1 over k cubed. And that's why the thing which you got from the De Sitter expansion is actually scale invariant. Okay, there are some other reasons. Of course, De Sitter has nice symmetries, and that's why you have to have a scale invariant spectrum and so on. Okay. Are there any questions to this? So, of course, mathematicians might argue that the whole argument is completely invalid because the integral is actually not convergent. And they are probably right. But who cares, right? So this is the right result. Very good. So now let me connect with the observation and return back to your question. But before I do that, I just, oh no, it's green. We might get sick if you use green. So spectral index so if you had exactly scale invariant spectrum, you would be assuming that this pk goes like 1 over k cubed. So now let's consider the deviation from this scale invariance, and this is characterized by this spectral index. So it's an S, and it's defined as follows: is 1 plus k d over dk logarithm of k cube pk. Okay. So obviously, if I had scale invariant spectrum, pk goes like 1 over k cubed. So I have logarithm of 1, which is 0. So ns is, so this is what people measure, is this spectral index. So ns equal to 1 would be scale invariant and then terminology, if you find that ns is smaller than 1, then people say it's red tilted spectrum and if it's bigger than 1 then it's blue tilted. Okay, so for the De Sitter expansion we just predicted ns equal to 1. Okay. So now you have this spectral index definition, and you have two possibilities. Either ns is actually a constant, or it is not constant. Right? If it's constant, then it's simple. If it's not constant, then it's more complicated. So ns not equal to constant, people refer to this case as running spectral index. Running spectral index. So if you go to a cosmology talk and people say, keep repeating the word running, 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 they probably talk about the spectral index. That not that actually anybody is running away from the speaker or whatever. So, okay, so that's the terminology. However, the observation actually doesn't support this idea. You don't need to have running spectral index. Actually, the observation by Planck actually tells you that ns is actually constant. So ns is constant. And so if ns is constant, then you can easily solve this equation, right? So I have constant, so I have ns minus 1 divided by k. It's some simple derivative, and you can solve for how the pk has to look like if ns is constant. And so you'll find, so solving the definition that sounds weird, definition of an S, we find that pk actually behaves very simply. It goes like k to minus 3 plus ns minus 1. Okay? So if you solve that equation, this is what you find. All right. So this was just proportional to, but if I fix what the fluctuation is at some instant of time, let's say when k is equal to k0, I can actually write down what the pk at any later time is, right? So I can actually write it exactly the solution by saying I fix the power spectrum to have some amplitude at k equal to 0. So let a0 be the amplitude of our power spectrum at k equal to k0. Then the power spectrum for any k, by just using that thing over there, is this a0 times k over k0, and then minus 3 plus ns minus 1. Well, okay, so if the spectral index is constant, then you are getting this beautiful solution for the power spectrum. And you see that the solution is characterized by two quantities, by the value of ns and by the value of these fluctuations. So we have two parameters. And so a0, ns. Okay. And so what I will tell you tomorrow is that actually it seems that our universe is completely consistent with just fixing six parameters. Okay, all you need to do is really fix six numbers, and then you understand our universe. So these are precisely two of them. So this amplitude of fluctuation, primarily of fluctuations, and this spectral index. And once you measure these two numbers, you know two out of six parameters which completely describe our universe. Okay, so just to make you excitement. So anyway, so the Planck measurement. What it gives you is that ns is constant. So really, you don't have running spectral index, or it's running very, you know, slowly. Doesn't run away. And so this is the result, plus minus 0.01. So now the spectral index is measured almost very precisely. And so you see that you almost get one, so you almost get scale invariant spectrum, but it's slightly red tilted. So slightly red tilted. And as I will show you tomorrow, this precisely corresponds to the prediction of slow roll inflation. Okay, so corresponds. Slow roll inflation prediction. So really the inflation wasn't exactly the sitter. It was driven by, let's say, scalar field, which was slowly rolling. And you know, if you replace the sitter calculation with the slowly rolling thing, then you get something which is smaller than one, precisely by this small parameter epsilon, which characterizes your slow roll. So that's why it's slightly smaller than one.
How do you measure this?
I have no idea. Oh. Sorry, I have to disappoint you. Are there any questions here? So tomorrow we sum it and calculate the true power spectrum.